listening to TV Madness with your host, Makisha Madden-Toby. If that sounds a little odd to you or familiar, and odd, it's the theme song from Mad Men, but sort of like a funky synthesizer version. Gotta love iTunes. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about the fifth season of Mad Men and sort of how it's been so far. I mean, I think viewers are excited. Some people have sort of grown bored with it after the first couple of episodes, but I'm still hooked. I love the sort of the story development with Don sort of growing old. We're watching Don get old and how he's interfacing with sort of the young people in his office as well as his young wife and sort of the conflict that rises out of that, as well as some of the other people. Roger's conflict with the young people in the office and how he keeps having go in his pocket and bankroll all these people and bribe them to do things for him in the office, and his conflict with Joan and his conflict with his ex-wife. I mean, there's this, I love it. I don't know. I'm biased. I've always loved Mad Men, and I love this fifth season. I guess my only problem so far this season is the whole Fat Betty thing. I know January Jones was pregnant in real life and they had to figure out something, but I just feel like, I don't know, I feel like Matthew Weiner's mad at her or something, and that his whole thing is just so, I don't know, sort of feels personal. Maybe that's just my perspective, and like I said, in the past I've not been the biggest January Jones fan, but after interviewing her earlier this year in March, I don't know. I just kind of have a greater respect for her as a working mom, and I'm a working mom, and I don't know. Maybe it's my own issues, but I just thought the Fat Betty thing was kind of lame. I thought it was kind of lazy, and I thought that maybe they had come up with something else, some other way to sort of explain her weight gain. And you know, the thing is about January Jones is she didn't really gain that much weight. She was mostly belly. So, I mean, I'm not saying sort of go the 30 Rock way and make it a complete farce, but maybe go more towards the sort of Cosby Show model and have her behind some grocery bags and newspapers until she has a baby. I don't know. I just did not like, I'm not liking this Fat Betty storyline. But, I mean, it's sort of one of those things where people who hate her or hate the character or hate the actress and the character are cheering and you know, that they see her suffer. But for me, not so much. I expect it more because Mad Men is such a cleverly written show. I just thought they would do something a little more clever, I guess. But that brings us back to the show and Don. Like I mentioned before, John Hamm plays Don Draper, you know, the anti-hero of the show, star of the show. And sort of we're watching him get old. And I had a great opportunity to interview John Hamm back in March before the show started. I did to see Don get a little older and a little bit more, I don't know, panicky maybe, or just insecure. And it's fun. It's a exciting, I don't know, course for the story to go along with. And I think that there's a lot of wiggle room with that. And Sally's growing up, and there's just a lot of stuff there. So we're going to go ahead and roll the interview. I got a chance, like I said, it's not just me. It's me and a few other reporters just throwing questions at John Hamm, who, if you notice, has sort of his voice is hoarse, because by this point he had been, like, really promoting the show a lot you know, sort of making himself overly available, but with good reason. And check it out. I think you'll enjoy it as much as I did.
It wasn't as easy as it has had been. The break was significant. I mean, we were off for a long time. Part of what made it a little more interesting was I think people came back with kind of a renewed sense of excitement to be back. I mean, when you're off that long, part of it is just like you miss everybody, and you want to see everybody again, and you get back into it, and so that made it a little bit easier. And then also I directed the first one, so that was the first one we shot, which of course will not be the premiere. So that also gave it a sense of kind of buoyancy and excitement. We had a tremendous amount of our crew return, you know, huge key crew members and department heads all came back. So everybody was pretty excited to be back to work. And that goes a long way. In many ways, it felt like season one, because we had the big layoff between the pilot and then episode two. There was a little bit of a ramp up to it, but it was very, very, very exciting to get back to work.
The proposal, obviously, you know, a lot of the audience was really taken aback when it happened. What did you think, you know, when you read that script and that he was going to do that?
Well, I knew what was going to happen, so it wasn't a surprise to me. Mm-hmm. Matt and I had discussed it kind of as the season went on. And you know, it's something that was said by Dr. Miller in the second or third episode of the fourth season when she said guys like you are usually married within a year. You know, Don thinks, of course, that's never going to happen to him, and how dare you? And, you know, she says it's something like, I forgot, people don't like to be thought of as statistics. And sure enough, you know, there it goes. So, you know, I think it was a natural progression. I think that this man had been struggling the whole season, had been fighting with his own demons and where his life is, and saw this person as a legitimate way to change and to change his situation for the better.
So is Don happy now, would you say?
Yeah.
I've seen the premiere episode. I see, you know, he's still got some issues.
You know, some residual growing pains, but mm-hmm. you know, I think that you've seen the premiere, so I think mm-hmm. that part of that is they are growing pains and they're figuring each other out and they don't know each other very well. These are two people that are not that don't have a tremendous amount of history together, and so it's an awkward dance for a little while, and hopefully that will settle into something more comfortable.
Don lost Anna last season, and with that he sort of lost another connection to being Dick Whitman. Do you think he's sort of leaving that persona behind, or is he sort of incorporating that into his Don Draper life?
I think that's an astute observation. I think that it's something that Matt and I talked about at the beginning of last season, where we started saying things like, you know, at a certain point in your life, you get old enough that you realize that the shit you cared about when you were 20 doesn't matter, and you've got other problems to deal with. And I think that that Don is maybe not coming to peace with the Dick Whitman existence and everything, but in losing Anna and losing that last kind of strand that connected him to that, there is a break, and I think that you know, Betty knows about the whole situation. Pete knows about the whole situation. You know, he told Faye last year about the whole situation, and when it was the background check on his. On his for the North American Aviation account, and at a certain point, you know, I think Don has grown up to realize, like, okay, almost accepting what Bert Cooper said in the first season of, like, who gives a shit, you know, who cares? He's this is the guy you are now. What you were doesn't matter, and this is America. People constantly reinvent themselves. And that's, I think, he's coming to grips with that a little more.
Is that why he didn't want to be with Faye, though? Is because she knew who he really is, or what?
You know, I think the decision to not be with Faye is a decision by Don to maybe not challenge himself the way he needs to be challenged. I think he settled for a way safer alternative in Megan.
The show's had, you know, a couple times now, some really fascinating Don Journeys West storylines. It always seems like, you know, a lot happens when he goes out. Those storylines have always been interesting for you to explore, and the fact that he does sort of let go of that sort of Don Draper armor in very different ways when he travels away from New York.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's kind of the classic definition of California is, you know, that's where people kind of, it's the end of the end of the road, and has been since the kind of beatnik days and the you know, everyone going west and kind of redefining themselves or changing in some way, and it's a much more laid back lifestyle out here, and especially coming from New York City, and I think that Don is no exception, and it's a release, it's a place where he can go and not have to carry this burden and put this armor on, and yeah, he's had some pretty weird experiences out in California, to say the least, but that may or may not be coming to an end.
What is it, do you think, that is about this show that has touched people so much?
You know, I wish I could condense it into a really awesome sentence, but I haven't been able to yet, and I think it's I think part of it is that it's escapist in the sense of it's set in a time in the past that is familiar enough to be recognizable in behavior and attitude and place, and yet distant enough to be a little bit foreign, a little bit fantastic, and you know, it's not set, it's not Downton Abbey, it's not Deadwood, it's not set so far in the past that you don't recognize the behavior, and you don't recognize, like, why are they, what are they doing, what is that thing that they're, you know, what's a butter churn, who, you know, what, like, you know, they have toasters and they have, you know, cars and things that we take for granted now, and so I think there is a little bit of that, and I think also it's a good story, you know. I think it's an interesting story on several levels. That's obviously not for everybody. I'm not sitting here saying that we've created the greatest thing since sliced bread, but it's something that I would watch even if I wasn't on it. And I find it fascinating. I find it wonderful writing, good storytelling, good acting, beautifully shot. I think it's a good way to spend an hour in front of your TV. And I've certainly gone on record as saying there are terrible ways to spend time in front of your TV too, but this is one of the good ones, and it's something that I'm really proud of, and I'm thrilled that people like it. You know, you don't get an opportunity to work on something that you are proud of too often, and the fact that it's something that I'm proud of that also happens to be successful in the culture at large is a, you know, it's hitting the jackpot, basically.
Speaking of which, did you watch Pan Am or Playboy Club?
I didn't see either one of them. And it wasn't for any sort of, you know, spiteful reasons at all. I don't think they missed my Nielsen point. but I didn't, for whatever reason. I don't watch a ton of network television, and what I do watch is usually comedy. So mostly I just didn't have time. And
what do you think shows that, like, were sort of inspired by Mad Men?
You know, I if imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, then that's great. You know, I mean, I'm very much looking forward to seeing Magic City. I think it looks really cool. I just think, you know, I'd be happy if either one of those shows were successful. I'd be thrilled, you know, because I think that in some way validates our show.
You, like, hope that the leading man is a blonde or redhead or something like that, or has a high-pitched voice. I mean, like, something that's really different than you.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that's how Hollywood works. You know, if a doctor show is successful, then next year there are going to be five doctor shows. If a you know, mystery show is successful one year, then next year there's going to be 10 mystery shows.
Right.
It's just how it works. And some of them succeed and some of them don't. But again, I'm a fan of quality television. If you tell a good story, whether it's on BBC or AMC or HBO or CBS, I don't care where it's on. If it's good, I want to watch it. And like I said, I'm looking forward to Magic City. I haven't seen Boss, but I hear it's really good. Like, I don't know. Like, show me a good story and I'll tune in. And now the great thing now is you just got to program it and you can watch it wherever you want. You can watch it on your phone, on the thing, and wherever else. So it's great.
Do you have any concern that Don Draper down the road might become a little too drab and ordinary? Because he's had this air of mystery about it, but slowly all the layers of the onion are being peeled away.
Well, I think that he's also getting older. And in a culture where that's not necessarily a good thing. That could become a liability, but I think that there's still dramatic tension to be mined from that, and we also have, you know, I'm certainly not the only character on the show. There's a lot of stories to tell, and you know, I've always said I don't think it's a mistake that the entire show begins on Peggy's first day at work. You know, it's in many ways a story of her journey as well, and that's something that we really explore this season. It's exciting, and you know, the younger generation is rapidly taking the reins of the culture from the older generation in this point in the 60s, and to be left on the outside of that is a terrifying prospect for someone who makes their living, you know, kind of pulling levers of the culture.
Speaking of Speaking of Peggy, the suitcase got so much acclaim. It was such a standout episode. Might we at some point see sort of a spiritual sequel to that, because that episode did so key in on that relationship between the two of them?
I think that Don and Peggy do have a special relationship.
Is she his work wife?
No. That would be Megan. but I do think they have a special relationship, and I think that they identify in one another this sort of ambition to succeed and leave behind where you've come from and to achieve in the big city in Manhattan. For Don, it was coming from the sticks, and from Peggy, it's coming from Brooklyn, which in many ways are the same thing. You both look at the big city and you think, I'm going to succeed there. And they both have that driving ambition, and I think that's what they both recognize in one another. And I think it's I think their dynamic is fascinating, and I obviously love Elizabeth. She's a wonderful actress, and we have an amazing time working together, and she brings so much to that character and so much to the show, and we're so lucky to have her. I think there's more to that story to be told.
When you did the suitcase, you're on a show that's continually great, but did you feel with that episode, like, that? Do you feel that there was something special about it that is going to get so much notice?
When we shoot the show, we're in such a bubble, it's hard to know when it's even coming out. It's a very difficult balance to strike, because you want to kind of focus on what you're doing and not worry about the other stuff. But again, like I said, I love working with Elizabeth. She's insanely talented, and her work on the show has been excellent from the get-go. So it was nice to be able to have an extended time with these two characters where they're really kind of talking about stuff. And it was, from a storytelling standpoint, it was important, and from a viewer standpoint, I think it was fulfilling. And I loved it. I love that. It's one of my favorite episodes of the show, if not my all-time favorite.
You mentioned directing. Is this your first time directing anything?
Yes, if you discount the scene study class I did as a junior in college. So yeah, pretty much the first time.
And did it give you a different perspective on the show?
A tremendous different. It was a completely different perspective on it. At this point, I've probably shot about 150 episodes of television, so I'm pretty familiar with how it works. But you never really know it until you're sitting behind the monitors and setting up a shot and figuring it out. And they had asked me to do it last season. After season three, one of the producers came up and asked if I'd be interested, and I said no, because I didn't really feel ready. For whatever reason, between then and now, I decided that I was ready, and they kindly came back and asked again, and I said, "Yeah, I think I can do it." And the only one for me to ever really do is the first one, because I don't have the time to do any prep while we're in the middle of the season. I just work too much. But I'd seen Bryan Cranston do it with grace and style, and I saw Slattery do it, and it was something that I thought it was a challenge that I was happy to try and overcome, and I felt like I did a really good job.
Will you do it again?
I hope so, if they ask.
Did John give you any advice before you...
No.
No? You're on your own.
No. But the resounding advice was basically just to lean on the crew, and they know what they're doing. Again, like, directing television is very much like the train's in motion. Just keep it on the tracks.
That was my interview with John Hammond and like four other people. But still, I mean, I'm happy with it, and it was awesome talking to him, and he is extremely attractive, and so much so me and the other woman reporter in the room were completely intimidated because his eye contact is so intense. So intense. But he's also an amazing actor, and I'm excited about this fifth season, as I mentioned, and I hope you are too. And thanks for listening today. I have to thank Marcia. You guys don't even know how amazing she is. And I hope to work with her again here at NPR West, who I also have to thank the people here at NPR West. They're amazing. And our sponsor, Record Surplus in Santa Monica, the last record store. Visit recordsurplusla.com. Thanks for listening.